Welcome to the Take Six Podcast.
Welcome to the Take Six Podcast, everybody. As always, I am your host, Hunter Surplus. We are recording this on a very sunny, kind of warm Wednesday afternoon. 18 hours removed from a Raptors Game 2 victory. But today, we have a very special guest. I'll get to him in just a second. Before I get to him, though, we've got, as always, on the other line, Callum Wise. Callum, my man, how are you?
Well, pretty great after last night. How are you feeling?
Oh, buddy, we'll get into that. We'll get into that. And then on the other line is that very special guest that I mentioned. We've got Connor Chambers from the TO Sports View podcast. Connor Chambers, my man. Thank you for joining us and welcome to the show.
Hey, I'm excited to be on it. Weather, like you said, is beautiful, reflects my mood. I'm fired up.
Yes, sir.
It's a great day to be a Toronto sports fan, I think.
Yes, sir. We got the Leafs coming up tonight. We won't be talking too much about the Toronto Maple Leafs on this podcast, but we've got the Leafs game coming up tonight, game 4 against Boston. We've got a 2-1 series lead. Today's episode, however, is a Raptors edition of the Take Six podcast. We decided to do this one after their first two games at home. I was hoping it was going to be a 2-0 Raptors lead going into Orlando, but they did get a home split. The big thing about that home split was the dud of a game that was game 1. The Raptors didn't really put up that great of a game. Obviously, Kyle Lowry had his troubles. We will talk about that a little bit later, but just to get the ball rolling here, that game 1 loss, does it worry you at all? Does it change your feelings about this Raptors team in any sort of way going forward in the playoffs?
No. I mean, here's what I took out of it after game 1. Was it frustrating and sort of mildly depressing? Yeah. Like, it sucks to lose to Orlando Magic game 1 at home. You really didn't envision that. But it took an unbelievable game from the Orlando Magic and a Steph Curry-esque performance from DJ Augustine, which he will never repeat in the series. And it took a really shitty game from the Toronto Raptors for all of that to sort of accumulate into a 3-point Orlando Magic win right at the last shot of the game. So I wasn't particularly worried. Obviously, the Toronto Raptors have a bit of a history of giving up game ones, whether it's on the road or at home. The Washington Wizards series of last year was different. With this year, obviously, we all expected, I think, the Raptors to be up 2-0 going into Orlando. But after that game one loss, I was still kind of optimistic. I said Raptors probably in six, no more. Like, I could see them winning in 5, but I could also see them maybe dropping one of game 3 or 4 in Orlando. So it's going to be hard to win 4 straight. I kind of envision them to take 2 at home, lose 1 in Orlando, and have the Raptors in 5. But either way, I'm not that even that game 1 loss didn't really shake my confidence in the team moving forward. I don't know about you guys, but that was certainly my perspective.
Oh, totally. Like you were talking about, DJ Augustine will probably never do that again. Like, his career has been very lackluster. He's been playing for 10 seasons, which is pretty long, but his career averages are pretty not that great. He averages 9.8 points and 4 assists. So a guy to go off like you said, Steph Curry-esque is probably not going to happen again.
No.
Yeah, and I'm with both of you guys there, especially with what you said, Connor, like how kind of all the cards had to fall in, you know, the right order for this Magic team to win. If DJ Augustine doesn't have that good of a game, then, you know, the Raptors' poor performance, they probably still win that game with how bad they played. And if, you know, the Raptors actually played well, it wouldn't have mattered how many points DJ Augustine scored. So just the fact that both of those things were able to happen in the same game is the only real reason that they won. And, you know, like we said, a 3-point win to the Magic, like, it sucks to see. And for me, it was, you know, a humbling outcome to that game more than anything. It didn't worry me, but I came into this playoffs, and you know, if you've been watching my Twitter at all, you know that I have been riding this team very high, especially going into the playoffs here. So it was humbling more than anything. It's not concerning me whatsoever. The people that are concerned about it and are like talking a lot of shit about the Raptors after that game one, like, I guess it's warranted, but they're fine. Like,
it wasn't even a terrible game. It was they won off a 3-point shot. Like,
yeah,
it's not like we were blown out by Orlando Magic. We lost like all these other teams that were supposed to, like, we'll get into that later. But yeah, we only lost by 3 points from an amazing like play at the end there. So, or not even an amazing play. It was like a defensive lapse too.
Yeah. So you kind of mentioned it there, Cal. Did the Warriors lost with that big comeback from the Clippers? The Sixers lost game one to the Nets, and the Nuggets lost game one to San Antonio, and it looked like they were going to lose again last night. Did those losses kind of make you feel better about that game one loss? And obviously, like, all of us kind of are in agreement here that it doesn't make us feel that bad. Like, we're not that upset about it. Does that kind of, you know, make you feel a little bit better? You're seeing these other teams losing and stuff.
Well, for me, like, seeing the Warriors choke is a great sight always. I love it. Like, I absolutely hate the Warriors. I'm sick of them. I'm sick of their team. So anytime I see them lose, especially in a historic fashion, always puts a smile on my face. Sixers, I think I've told you this before. I've definitely said this on multiple podcasts and on my Twitter. I think the Sixers are all smoke and mirrors, and I would not be surprised if Brooklyn actually beat them in a 7-game series. So to see them game one lose to the Nets was kind of not shocking at all to me. I hopped on a round table podcast where there was another person that kind of agreed with me too, but obviously, like, Sixers will be favored in that, but to have the Nets win, even the Sixers coach was saying that it's not a great matchup for the Sixers. The Brooklyn Nets will play them well, as kind of shown in game one. Game two, obviously the Sixers kind of rebounded just like we expected them to, but Nuggets losing to the Spurs, I mean, anytime you go up against a Greg Popovich team, it's always going to be a tight game regardless of what number they are in the standings, 1-8. You're always going to get a well-coached, well-disciplined team in San Antonio. So I still thought that out of the Sixers loss and the Nuggets loss, that the Raptors loss was the worst of the three, but it didn't. Like I said before, I was never really worried in particular. Just the isolation of that game was not, it was the worst out of the three. The Warriors was definitely the worst out of all of them. Losing in 31 points is legitimately historic. Never been done in the playoffs to come back 31 points. So that was the worst of them, and that made me feel a little bit better. But again, no real worry on my end when it came to the Raptors in game one.
Yeah, like you said, you can see Brooklyn beating Philly, like all these other, not the Clippers, but I don't have any worry for Orlando beating the Raptors, just because after game two, you see what we could do with the team that we have. Like, we destroyed them that game. And yeah, so I'm not worried at all going through this series. I think the Raptors will win in either 5 or 6 games.
And Orlando was kind of riding high coming into the playoffs, right? I think they had...
Oh, yeah. They were the best team, I think, after the
All-Star break or something like that. So
I think they were 22-9, maybe.
Yeah. Like, so they were riding high. They just made it into the playoffs. This team was so fired up to even get a shot at playing a team as good as the Toronto Raptors for 7 straight games, or, well, you know, 5 or 6 straight games, realistically. But, I mean, it happens, right? That team wants to win. The Raptors kind of came out a little lackluster. They didn't show a whole lot of heart, I would say. There were a couple things that kind of, you know, coaching mistakes and errors in that sense. Like, you know, Kawhi Leonard only played 33 minutes as well. That shouldn't happen in a close game in the playoffs. If he plays, you know, 35, 36 minutes, I think it's a totally different story. This game, you know, goes the opposite way and the Raptors end up winning there. And, you know, we've kind of mentioned it a little bit that the Raptors game two against Orlando was much better. They had the biggest playoff win in franchise history with 29 points. Lowry actually got buckets, which was nice to see. They're very dominant on defense and offense. What did you guys notice was the biggest difference between, you know, game one for the Raptors and then game two for the Raptors?
Defense. The defense was so much better. You could tell, like, I have the stats up right here. In game one, we had four steals, and in game two, we had 10 steals, and that turned into Orlando giving up 17 turnovers, giving up 26 points, which is pretty great. And you could tell, like, just seeing, like, Gasol was playing, he had four steals at the end of that game, and a lot of people had, yeah, there was a couple people with two, so, like, yeah, the defense was just so much better. And obviously Lowry going bouncing back after game one in terms of scoring.
Yeah, Callum's right. The defense was obviously, I think that when you play great defense like that, it fuels your offense, especially because then you can start to get fast breaks. And who's the king of fast breaks on this team? Pascal Siakam. Kind of gets him involved in the game a little bit more. Obviously, he didn't have as many points as he did in game one. He had 19 points in game two, and he had 20-something in game one. But I still thought that even with that taken away, I think that Pascal Siakam was used more effectively because of the fact that they were so active on the defensive end. Marcus Gasol had a couple of great steals. Kawhi Leonard was just really agitating his opponents because of his length, and the gigantic hands that this guy has is unbelievable. Ben Simmons is fearing a matchup with Kawhi Leonard. If they get to the second round, he's shitting himself, I promise you. So definitely defense was the key. And the thing that I still noticed, and it could even been a worse game for the Magic, is if Toronto still hit open shots. I think that there were still some open shots that they missed, which was my takeaway from game one was, look, the Raptors missed a lot of open shots, and if they hit those open shots, it doesn't matter, they're gonna win. They hit some more, like they hit a few more open shots, but they didn't fully hit every open shot that they had an opportunity of hitting. The defense fueled the offense, and that kind of made up for the fact that they weren't hitting those shots. But if they have all that clicking together, it's gonna be almost impossible to stop this team in the playoffs.
Yeah, you guys are spot on when it comes to the defense. But the biggest thing that I saw was the pace that the Raptors were playing at. They were able to control it much better than in game one. And a big attribution of that is the defense that they did play. They were able to stop Orlando with what they wanted to do and then turn that into fast break points and fast break opportunities. They were running every chance they got. There were a lot of possessions, a lot of stretches of time where they'd just get a rebound if they made a defensive stop and just run. If the Magic did end up scoring, which, you know, seemed almost impossible for them to do, they would get the inbound and just run and try to push the pace as much as possible, because when this team is aggressive, especially with Kyle Lowry, when that team is aggressive, they are that much better than any other team, and they will be impossible to stop. And so I mentioned Lowry there for, you know, in terms of pushing the pace and whatnot. In his game one performance, we talked about it, 0 points, 0 of 7 shooting, 0 of 2 from the free throw. He did do fairly well defensively. A lot of people were on Twitter and Instagram kind of saying, oh, Lowry didn't have that bad of a game. He was still a plus. He was the only guy on a team with a plus. And, you know, Fred VanVleet was minus 20 or something like that, and all this kind of stuff. He did defensive stuff. He made good passes, was rebounding. In that game one, what kind of stuff did you notice that made that 0 points happen? Was he not aggressive enough, or what did you guys see?
Oh, yeah. I think he wasn't, like, he... You could see in game two, like, he rushed the basket so much more often. And, like, he didn't have a terrible game. He had, what was it, 8 rebounds, 7 assists, or the other way around, which is not terrible. Those are pretty good for rebounds and assists. He just didn't have a good shooting game. And, it's, like, obviously it would have been nice for him to score a couple baskets, then we would have won. But it's also, like, what Connor said is, if we hit the open shots, it wouldn't have mattered. We would have won that game anyways. So I think Lowry didn't do a terrible job. It's just like, you hate to see someone score. Like last night, Danny Green, 0 points. Yeah, and he's been one of the most consistent, or the most consistent, on this team in terms of shooting. And a bunch of other, like, Meeks had 0 points, and but that, yeah, like Danny Green, seeing him have 0 points is kind of surprising. And it's like the same with Lowry. It was super surprising to everyone that he got 0 points, but it's just, it happens. It happens sometimes. And he was obviously carried by Kawhi Leonard, and who had 37 points last night, and Kyle Lowry, who played an amazing game. So it's like he could have scored. I feel like he could have scored. Like, he didn't take that many shots. You said he was, what, 0 for 7?
Yeah, in game
Like,
one, it's 0 for 7.
that's not that many shots, like, to
Yeah,
be honest.
the thing with Kyle though in game one, and I was actually on a podcast with Mike Bossetti from Raptors Rapture, and he brought up a really good point, which we kind of discussed, and he said in the 0 point game where he was 0 of 7, he was 0 of 6 from three, and he attempted one field goal inside the arc. In game two, he attempted 9. So like Callum was kind of saying at the beginning, he was a lot more aggressive with the ball, and he was really using his body effectively and driving the lane. I think that, yes, he was getting open looks for threes, and that's why he was shooting them. But if those aren't going in, you have to find other ways to be more productive for this team. So if that means driving a lane and then dishing out, or if that means using a screen and roll effectively, and then using your body on a big man to either take a foul or hit one of those Kyle Lowry-esque circus shots that he will do underneath the rim. That's sort of what fuels his game, and then I think that allows him to be better as a shooter because he has the confidence to say, well, okay, if the look isn't there for me from three, I know I'm feeling good enough to drive to the hoop and make that basket. And I think that he didn't really have that confidence in game one, and in game two it really showed because you sort of saw him everywhere. He was really everywhere, both on the offensive and defensive end, but particularly on offense. He wasn't just isolated on the 3-point line. He was moving everywhere, which was, I think, the key for him to get 22 points in game two.
Yeah, both of you guys hit the nail on the head with that, so I won't really, kind of add to it. You guys said exactly what it was, but it was kind of reminiscent of what, that little 10-game stretch or whatever it was earlier in the season when he was kind of putting up these games where he would have, 5 points, 6 points on, one of eight or one of nine shooting when he just wasn't as aggressive, that people tend to forget. Which Kyle Lowry do you expect throughout the rest of the postseason? Is it going to be a mix? Do you expect game two or game one?
I think it's going to kind of be a balance. Like for Kyle Lowry, he doesn't need to be the second scoring option on the starting unit, which is what he has been for most of his career with the Toronto Raptors. He's either been first scoring option or second scoring option. With this starting unit, obviously Kawhi Leonard is the top scoring unit. Pretty arguably, Pascal Siakam is number two, and some might even make a case for Danny Green or Marc Gasol, depending on who's hot, to be the third scoring option. So Kyle Lowry can even slide back and just say, wow, if I'm really truly embracing the point guard role, dishing the ball, getting rebounds, and almost being that triple double guy with like 10, 12, 14 points, 10, 12 assists, at least getting a double double, and then rebounds are kind of bonus. But if he's sort of that player, I think that that's what we should expect from Kyle Lowry's 12, 14, 16 points, 10, 11, 12 assists. And then rebounds, he's always active on the glass, like 5, 6, 7, whatever. But to have that for Kyle Lowry, I think, is what Raptors fans should expect. And I think that's what will make everybody else around him successful and really propel Kawhi Leonard and Pascal Siakam to get these more open looks and have better opportunities to score.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that it's going to be a mix between game one and two. Like, he's not going to have to be the second option for scoring, just because, like you said, this entire starting lineup is, like, so good in terms of scoring abilities. So sorry. I definitely think that he can play that more laid back role, just scoring a couple points here and there, just making sure that he dishes the ball properly and getting those open looks that we've been getting, and we'll eventually, like, we'll be getting those shots in. especially like Danny Green, who had the 0 point game. I don't think that's going to happen again, just because he's been so consistent throughout the year in terms of shooting. So, yeah, I think Lowry doesn't have to put on like an amazing game like he did last night, but it has to be like somewhere in between game one and game two for it to just work.
So now to the guy that we've kind of been waiting for this whole season through the managing of his load, Kawhi Leonard. He finally has become, you know, the quote unquote playoff Kawhi that everyone likes to talk about, or everyone liked to talk about coming into this postseason. Are you guys as satisfied and happy with, you know, this quote unquote playoff Kawhi as you thought you were going to be? Has he met your expectations that you had coming into this playoffs?
Go ahead, Callum, because I feel like we'll have the same answer. So I'll let you go first.
Yeah. I mean, like after last night's game, you could just tell like this guy, his shooting ability is insane. And I think it was before last night's game, Kobe had just talked about how amazing Kawhi has turned into a shoot, like how his shooting ability has changed throughout his career and like how amazing he is now. And just the load manager, you can tell that he's well rested. Like Hunter said, though, in game one, he didn't play those huge minutes that everyone thought he would. And maybe if he did, we would have won that game. Like there are so many ifs in game one, like that we could have won. But like game two, it was like a whole nother story. He was scoring everything, especially in that third quarter, man. Oh my God. Everyone was scoring for the Raptors in the third quarter. It was great. But I think that is what Kawhi is going to do for this team in the playoffs from now on. Especially now, cause like Nick Nurse has seen what those low minutes have, that he can't do those low minutes. He has to play him consistently throughout these playoffs because he's had that load management throughout the whole year. So yeah, he's definitely at our met our expectations in terms of how great he's supposed to be.
Yeah, if Kawhi Leonard in a close game has less than 38 minutes going forward in the playoffs, I'm gonna jump off a roof. Because that, come on, like this is what we have built Kawhi Leonard up for the entire year, and he's come out and he said those are 82 practice games, or I guess in his case 60 that he played, and now I'm ready. So this is your star, this is your guy. I get that you still want to be cautious, I understand that, but if he's healthy, there's no reason that he should be sitting for more than 10 minutes in a close game. I think that Nick Nurse learned that the hard way in game one, and it's good that he's able to learn that against an Orlando Magic team, so mm-hmm. he can kind of figure out, okay, obviously he's coached in the playoffs before as an assistant in the D League at the time, overseas in England and stuff like that. But, you know, it's going to be difficult for him to really make those adjustments.
Yeah, that's literally the only thing that I haven't liked about playoff Kawhi is like the 33 minutes that he played in game one. He only played 33 minutes in game two, but that's just because the Raptors were balling, right? Like he didn't need to play 36, 37 minutes in that game because they were up by so much. But yeah, like he still seems to surprise me every time I watch him play, because like I know how good he is defensively, but I always forget like his offensive capabilities, right? Like his drives to the basket are bar none. Like I can't think of anyone as strong, as quick, as easy, you know, fundamentally sound. He makes everything look. It's like it's nuts to watch a guy play like that in a Raptors uniform. It kind of reminds me of like watching LeBron play against us in like the second round or conference finals, whatever, when we would be playing him in the playoffs. And like, we're so lucky to have a guy like Kawhi Leonard on this team, because like, we don't know if he's going to come back next year. And I, you know, I'm knocking on wood all over the place here, because I want him back. But yeah, like he's a walking bucket. And that's the thing that surprises me. Like he is a bona fide bucket. This guy can do whatever he wants offensively. He can do whatever he wants defensively. Callum, like you said, he has turned into an immaculate shooter. Like we haven't seen that development, but you know, we know that he's turned into an immaculate shooter. He's so efficient. Like in both games, he shot over 50% from the field, over 50% from three. He didn't get to the line as much as he usually does. And, you know, maybe that's one thing that he can improve on, but everything else, like, it's crazy how good this guy is. And it's a nuts thing to see a guy with that much talent and who is that fundamentally sound, which that kind of stuff will be able to be brought over into the playoffs, you know, in a Raptors uniform in the North. It's pretty dope to see. Someone that we say is, you know, the Kawhi light or the, you know, diet Kawhi is Pascal Siakam. And so this is Siakam's kind of first year with a really big role. And we've been talking about this all year with the most improved player discussion, with, you know, any Pascal Siakam discussion we really have, we've talked about how big his role has become. And so now he's finally got to play playoff minutes within that role. And, you know, Connor and Callum, you kind of both alluded to this earlier. He's become that, you know, second or third scorer so far with this Raptors team, depending on the night, depending how hot he is. And he's continued that play with this first two games of the postseason. How do you guys feel about Siakam's play as a playoff starter? I'm sure we're all positive about it, but is there, you know, are you happy with how he's contributing to this team?
Oh yeah. But like even game one, he played so great. And most of the scoring was done through him and Kawhi Leonard. And I think it was, he played superbly in the fourth quarter. He was amazing. It's just, we didn't get those defensive stops and that led to the loss. But obviously in game two, he didn't have to be that scorer because Kawhi was just doing it all, but he still got 19 points and he was still doing like those full court sprints. And he was still playing like Pascal, and obviously getting those 19 points helped. But yeah, he's played great so far, and it's only the first two games.
Yeah. He's got a tough matchup against Jonathan Isaac. Like I know some people might think that that's blown out of proportion or whatever, but Jonathan Isaac is kind of similar to a Pascal Siakam in his game, especially in the length defensively. And Pascal Siakam is kind of a unique player in the NBA. Obviously he's like that stretch four or whatever, but his athleticism and his length are unique. There's only a few that sort of have that ability in the league, and Jonathan Isaac is one of those players. So I think that it's a tough matchup for Kawhi Leonard, and he's been doing very well against Jonathan Isaac. The fact that he had 20 plus in the first game and 19 in the second game, to me, I'm impressed by that, because he's making a lot of difficult, tough shots, but he's confident in himself and he's driving the bucket. If he can just start getting his three to drop, he hasn't made one yet in the postseason. So I think once that starts falling down, I think he'll even have more confidence, which is kind of crazy to think about, but I'm really excited to see what Pascal can do, barring we advance in rounds 2-3, you know, NBA finals potentially. I think that he has a lot of good matchups coming his way. And I think that the Orlando Magic matchup, in particular Jonathan Isaac, might be one of his most difficult that he will face for the entire postseason. So the fact that he's showing this now, that he is able to get 20, is a great sign.
Yeah, and it's pretty crazy that Siakam, like, to me, Jonathan Isaac is Orlando's best defender, at least, you know, at the wing position and, yeah, and probably on the whole team. But Siakam is getting this attention from, you know, Jonathan Isaac, which you would assume the best defender would be on Kawhi Leonard. But I think that, you know, is more of a thing towards how good Kawhi Leonard is and how, you know, he would just kind of overpower Isaac. But it's really cool to see him go against this, not necessarily elite defender, but like almost elite defender. He'll probably be an elite defender one day. And being able to still get buckets on him and still produce offense, like he's not getting a crazy amount of assists, but that's because they're not isolating him as much as they do sometimes. I've noticed that his end of quarter runs have gotten a little bit better. He's been able to kick out for really nice wide open threes that have just, you know, been missed. I think Fred VanVleet missed one yesterday at the end of the second, I want to say. But he's just looking great. Like, he hasn't missed a beat. I know that was a big concern that Raptors fans had and people around the league had, were that is it going to translate into playoff basketball when the games are more intense? And obviously we aren't into those rounds yet where the games have become intense for this Toronto Raptors team, but he brings a presence that makes their top three of, you know, him, Lowry, and Kawhi so scary. And obviously, you know, the Sixers have that, you know, big five, I guess, like, you know, medium-sized five that they have. And then the Celtics have a pretty decent big three as well. But I – and you know, the Bucks, they have Giannis. I guess he counts as three people. But, like, that big three with Siakam, you know, being able to continue with his success and go into that role – and be that guy for this Raptors team is very helpful. And I think he might be the key to what, you know, keeps this ship rolling for the Raptors as, you know, a deep playoff run. The other guy that we kind of like almost like, this would be like a diet, Kawhi Leonard, or like, you know, if it was Coke Zero, it'd be like Kawhi Zero.
The watered down.
Yeah, it's like the vodka you stole from your parents, you know, and then you just had to put water. The half the bottle's water, half the bottle's vodka. That's kind of what OG Anunoby is. We're missing him though. He got the the appendectomy after, you know, just kind of a brutal season for him, on the court, off the court, all the stuff that's gone on with him. I truly do feel bad for him. Do you guys think that the Raptors are missing OG in this series? I mean, they say that he probably won't be back until an Eastern Conference finals matchup, if we get there and if he's even fully healthy by then. Are they missing him right now? Have they kind of missed a beat without this guy?
Not really. Even though, like you said, OG hasn't had a great season. So obviously you want him to prove himself in these playoffs, but it's not like we're missing him crazy amounts in these playoffs. Like, we haven't, like, the defense we saw in game two was great. That's what OG is. He is usually a great defender, but I mean, going into the next rounds, we're probably going to need him just because you need that extra player. But yeah, right now I don't think we're missing him.
No, we're not missing him in this round. Obviously moving forward, and if you look at potential matchups of Philadelphia and then maybe one of Milwaukee or Boston, they have a lot of players that OG Anunoby can effectively defend. So I think that you would need him more on the defensive end than the offensive end. Obviously he hasn't had the best year, and he's had a lot of personal issues and then appendectomies. It just hasn't been a good year for him. I don't think it's really to his fault, and I think that he is trying to be the best player that he can be, but it just hasn't worked out for him this year. I still have a lot of faith in him, and I think that even if he has half of the growth that Pascal Siakam had this year, I think he's going to develop into a great player next year. So I still have a lot of faith and hope and promise in OG Anunoby. Just right now, it's not really there. But going forward, we would probably need him. But I heard today on the radio, Michael Grange said he estimates that OG Anunoby will be out for a minimum of 3 more weeks. So that probably puts him either to late Eastern Conference Finals or NBA Finals. So as a team, we have to kind of prepare for OG Anunoby to not be in this round, next round, and possibly the round after being the Eastern Conference Finals.
Wow. Yeah, that's tough, but
it sucks.
It does suck. Fuck, poor guy. But
yeah,
you know, like you guys both said, like, I don't know how much he really would be playing right now. It would be nice to have him kind of as that eighth or ninth man. I probably feel like he'd be, you know, the ninth man, like, even with McCaw coming back, who has played half decently. I think with this Raptors team, he might even get a couple more minutes over OG Anunoby if it really came down to it. Where I think we will miss him, if, you know, he does come back healthy and does come back you know, in somewhat of a groove, will be that potential finals matchup against Golden State. As we know, Golden State has a really tough, you know, top five, but outside of their top five guys, their bench unit is very weak, especially with that DeMarcus Cousins injury that just happened. their bench unit is really weak. So if we had that extra guy who is, I would say OG's a little better than, you know, Patrick McCaw, Jeremy Lin, Jody Meeks on a good day for OG, I probably say that he's a good guy to have at the very end of our bench in terms of like at the end of our rotation, just to put out there in a game where it might come down to the bench units with the Warriors, because their bench unit does struggle so much. Having that extra advantage of OG Anunoby being a tough defender, a guy who can score sometimes, you know, when he's on, he can score. He's very strong on the ball, very strong defender. So that's where I think we'll miss him as of right now, and probably throughout the rest of the Eastern Conference. I don't think we'll miss him a ton, and evidently we probably won't be seeing him in the East, so we will never know how he'll do in the East.
It's a mystery.
It is a mystery. None of us will know, but it's all good. So I think that is it for today. As always, you can find us at @take_6 on Twitter. That's 6IX for all of you people. You can find us on Facebook, Take Six. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and you know the name. It's Take Six. Search us there. Find us all those places. Give us some great ratings and reviews. And then, yeah, Connor Chambers, thank you so much for joining us, my man.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. This was a lot of fun, guys.
Yeah. Where can the people find you? Twitter, Instagram, whatever it is. Where are people finding you?
So Twitter and Instagram, I have the same handle, @TO_sportsviews. I'm a lot more active on Twitter than I am on Instagram. It's just kind of a little lonely. So just kind of find me on Twitter. I'll be there for sure. You can check out the website, torontosportsviews.com. And you can also listen to the podcast, which I've been doing more evidently than the website, which is the TSV podcast. So anywhere that you find podcasts, like you guys said, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, all that fun stuff, Anchor, we're all there. So take it, get a listen, give us a listen. I've had Hunter on now for 2 podcasts. So if you enjoyed our banter back and forth and you want to hear more, you can kind of hop on mine. And if you like hockey, if you like baseball, we did a whole 3-sport podcast on the TSV podcast, and we did a Raptors and Leafs one together. It was exciting. Playoff season is here and Toronto is buzzing, and I'm very excited for the next month, because I have faith in both the Raptors and the Maple Leafs now. It's great.
Yes, sir. So guys, thank you for listening. Go check out all of Connor's stuff at the TO, TSV Sports, all that kind of good stuff, all that fun playoff hockey, playoff basketball. He's always got good content out there. His Twitter is one of the better Toronto sports follows on out there. So guys, go check him out. Callum Wise, as always, thank you so much for coming on. You are the man. I know you're coming down to the final grind in your semester here, so I hope you're doing all right there, buddy.
Yeah, you too. Thanks everybody.